The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Fans, can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Welcome in, everyone, to the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The winter meetings are currently ongoing down in Florida, and the Red Sox so far, at least in talks, have been pretty busy. So no real moves yet, but there's a lot of rumors flying around, so we're going to break down some of those with you tonight. I'm your host, Jason Kelly. I'm here with Chris Filico and Terry Cushman. Guys, let's just start off with something that actually just dropped about 20 minutes ago. Apparently, one of the hotter free agents out there, Bo Bichette, had a Zoom call with the Red Sox that supposedly went very well. I don't know if that was earlier today or tonight, but that news just dropped on Twitter about 20 minutes ago. So, Chris, what is your reaction to Bo Bichette having a Zoom call with the Red Sox?
It's funny because, I mean, their call kind of came out of nowhere. I don't think anyone really anticipated that. But, I mean, we've kind of been quietly linked to Bo Bichette now, it seems, for like about a week and a half or so. I mean, I wouldn't mind taking Bo Bichette from the Toronto Blue Jays, especially what it looks like the potential spending spree they may go on this offseason, only further solidifying their chances at dominating the American League, which is pretty weak right now. You know, it seems like the Red Sox front office is pretty split right now. There's a good percentage of them that are making it number one priority to bring back Bregman. And then you heard some rumors out there, or reports, I should say, where the front office, there's a part of it that kind of, I don't want to say wants nothing to do with Bregman, but it would rather pivot to Bo Bichette. And I don't know if that's because of age, other factors out there. But I got to be honest, if it came down to the two of them, I think I would be all about Bo Bichette at this point. I don't know. What do you guys think?
1,000% I would take Bo Bichette over Alex Bregman for sure. And I don't know where Bichette would play. I mean, Craig Breslow has adamantly been on the record saying that Trevor Story will be the shortstop for the Boston Red Sox in 2026. So does that mean Bichette goes to second, perhaps over to third? I would say probably third base would be the best fit for him. It's less technical. You're just knocking down, you know, line drives, grounders, shipping it over to second or first. It might be a little bit less wear and tear on him. He is only 28 years old, or will be 28 years old next year. So that kind of makes it a lot more attractive. I mean, I think he was projected to get a 6-year deal by MLB Trade Rumors for just under $200 million, so about $30 million per year. That would take him to about age 34, age 35. That's pretty good. I mean, players can still be productive at that age. He's consistently right around a 290 to 300 hitter for most of his career. Decent pop. He did hit, 18 home runs last year. So I guess he's usually hitting around 20 or so per year. 29 was his most in 2021, led MLB in hits that year, actually 2 years in a row, 2021, 2022. So if you're going for an infielder and it's going to be the free agent route, I think Bichette probably would be the best bang for your buck. Most strikeouts he's ever had in the season, 155. That was 2022. Only 91 strikeouts this past year in 582 at-bats. So, yeah, give me Bichette over Bregman.
Yeah, the age alone makes Bichette a really attractive option. He's got 4 years on Bregman. So, and, you know, we keep hearing that Bregman wants a long-term deal. He wants, you know, that sort of one last big contract, and he wants to kind of finish his career with whoever he signs with, which is good in a way, but it's also a little scary because he is, you know, on the wrong side of 30. He already missed a bunch of time this year with that quad strain. It's the second time it's happened to him. Who's to say that it's not going to keep happening, especially as he gets older? What's he going to look like at 34, 35 when he's in the middle of whatever deal he signs, right? Bichette, you don't have to worry about it as much. He's a little bit younger. He's had some injury problems too, but nothing, you know, overly significant. The only thing Bichette is your defense does get a lot worse, right? You got to figure out where to play him. I don't think third base is a great place to put him, a great option for him, but you may not have a choice if you can't get Bregman. I don't know if you put him at second base, you put Meyer over at third, maybe that's a little bit better, but yeah, defensively he'll struggle, but the bat is real, right? The bat skills are real. He doesn't strike out a ton, puts the ball in play. Not a ton of power, so the only issue there is if Bichette's the only bat you get, you haven't fixed your power problem because he's got about the same power output as Jaron Duran, right? So it's going to be 15 to 20 homers max out of Bichette. Maybe a little bit more if he's playing full-time at Fenway, but I don't know. He's more of a line drive kind of guy anyway. So if it's Bichette, I'm okay with it, especially because of the age. And, you know, if he gets a 6-year deal, as you mentioned, that brings him to age 34. That's not bad. But if it's the only bat you get, you're not fixing the power problem. So that's the only issue. He'd have to be like, you have to be Bichette and Alonso, who we'll get into, right? Or Bichette and Schwarber. Then you can sort of say, okay, well, now you got the guy who can get on base and can drive guys in, you know, a different way. And you've got the big power bat in the middle of the lineup. So that would be palatable, but I don't see it happening. I think Bichette is going to get way overpaid. I don't know by who, but I feel like it's going to turn into a bidding war pretty soon, and I think the Red Sox are going to get timid, and they're going to bow out of that bidding war. I think Bichette at some point here is going to become the most, you know, attractive free agent on the market because of his age and because of the fact that, you know, he's really only had 1 year where his numbers were a little bit down. Otherwise, he's been a consistent, you know, solid hitter his whole career. And being under 30 years old, you know, teams that are afraid to sign guys like Schwarber and Alonso and Bregman because of their age, they'll pivot to Bichette. And they'll say, well, yeah, because, you know, we'll get a lot more out of him. So I think there's about to be a big bidding war for Bichette. And I just feel like the Red Sox will get outbid and they'll get spooked. And they'll drop out of it, and maybe then they pivot to Bregman if he's still there, because it feels like his market is ice cold at the moment. So we'll see. I think the Bichette stuff is going to pick up pretty soon, though. I'm curious to see how long the Red Sox stay in it, but I think at the end of the day, he's going to go somewhere else.
See, I think if you do want Bichette, which is the guy I would want, you almost have to hope that someone comes out of the woodwork and just gives Bregman crazy money, because I do feel like there's this some sort of emotional attachment to Bregman with part of the front office specifically. And if they lose out on him, especially unforeseen, because you're right, I think his market is extremely cold right now by the looks of it. If someone just comes and swoops in, that might be our chance to get Bichette. And yeah, I agree with you. And I don't think the one thing I will credit the Red Sox, you haven't heard much as far as on the front of Bichette or Bregman as the power bat, right? Because you keep hearing the words power from the Red Sox front office, and there's never those names attached to it. So I do believe they do understand that we need a power bat. I truly think that Bichette is only a name that's being mentioned because of Bregman. So there's some sort of parallel there. And, you know, I see people commenting as far as the injury part, because yeah, Bichette has had injuries, but look at the biggest difference between these two players just this year, right? Because they both got injured this season. Bichette was obviously not nearly as long-term as Bregman. When Bregman came back, he did miss a beat. In fact, he was never the same player when he returned from his injury. Bichette literally returned for the playoffs and was probably one of the most clutch hitters for the Blue Jays, and honestly hit a 3-run bomb that should have won them a World Series. Thank God it didn't. Sorry, Canada. But I mean, that just, it just goes to show. And again, those 2 years, to both your point, even if you do give him 6 years, you will still get out of that contract with him being younger than if you gave Bregman a 3-4 year deal. It's a no brainer.
Chris, isn't California and Canada the same thing, really?
It's not far off.
Same levels of lunacy. But here's a question for you, for both of you. It seems like Breslow prefers Bo Bichette. I think that's Breslow's guy. And we know that Bregman is Alex Cora's guy. So I think Chris and I were talking before we came on. There could be an internal divide between the two. So who do we want to see win that war? Do we want to see Alex Cora win it, or do we want to see Craig Breslow win it?
If what you're saying is accurate, 100% Breslow. And to your point, that would be extremely telling, because whoever gets the nod or the favoritism in that decision would show really where ownership and like some of the higher ups, where their, I don't want to say loyalty, but where their trust lies. Because let's face it, we've all speculated that somehow, some way, Alex Cora might be the heir apparent to this position. And if that's the case, could go a long way in making this decision. But if Breslow's in full control and they say, hey, listen, spend the money where you want, go get who you want, he gets Bo Bichette, it kind of neuters Alex Cora a little bit in that decision-making process. I'm fine with it, because honestly, with some of the things that Alex Cora has said and we've talked about on this podcast, he has made some boneheaded comments that make me think he would be a terrible decision maker in that position.
Yeah, at the end of the day, the guy who's constructing the roster is the guy who I want winning out on that one. And you know what? If I'm sure Cora is more of a Bregman guy, but it's not like he's going to hate Bo Bichette. I mean, it's not like Cora's going to stomp his feet and say, well, I don't want to put this guy in the lineup. Like, no, he's still a really good player. He's just not your guy. But also, your guy, again, missed half the season and then, you know, came right out in the middle of the wild card chase and said, yeah, I'm going to opt out. I'm not, you know, I'm going to opt out of my contract, and created this huge distraction. So, yeah, I get it. Like, he was still good with the young guys. He was good with Anthony and Meyer and, you know, Campbell when he was there. But eventually, I've talked about this before, those young guys aren't going to need an Alex Bregman. Roman Anthony is so effing talented that at some point, he's not going to need to listen to Alex Bregman and go onto the iPad with him and all that. Like, he's, because at some point, Roman Anthony's probably going to eclipse what Alex Bregman is as a player. So that kind of stuff is valuable, you know, for a little bit, but not for a 6-7 year contract for a guy who's on the wrong side of 30 and might blow out his quad again. Like, so at the end of the day, to answer your question, I want Breslow winning out. If Breslow is more on Bichette than he is on Bregman, then he should win out on that one. And Cora, you know, look, you're the manager, you get some say, but at the end of the day, the guy constructing the roster is the one, he's your boss. So fill out the lineup card, figure out where to play Bichette, and deal with it.
I agree. You know, I want Breslow to be accountable for the front office stuff, and I want Alex Cora to be accountable for on the field stuff. And you know, I definitely prefer Bichette of the two. And Bregman's a moron, if we're thinking about it. This past season couldn't have gone any worse, you know, after the first half. He has the quad injury, comes back, has almost no power, 27 RBIs, I think, when he came back from the quad thing, and he could have come back for $40 million for one more year and then opted out on a productive year. So I don't know if that was just a lapse of judgment or perhaps it was a lack of confidence that he was going to have that big year to go into free agency one more time in 2027. And actually, you know what? Now that
got a lockout, Terry.
Yeah, literally
would have been 1 year older. Even if he had a productive season, it would have been a lockout.
And he wouldn't have signed that deal until 2028. So yeah. That's why he had to do it. All right, never mind. Clearly, I did not think it through.
Sorry about that. So the other name that's been floating around, and a guy who apparently has interest in coming to Boston. I think the interest should be mutual, in my opinion, and that's Pete Alonso. So Alonso is scheduled to meet with the Red Sox this week. Obviously, big-time power bat. It sounds like the Mets have already said, we're good. We're not giving him the years or the kind of contract that he wants. So Pete Alonso is available. Big-time right-handed power bat. Probably looking for a four or five-year deal, though. So if that's the case, Chris, do you want Pete Alonso here, or does the contract and the length of it scare you?
I mean, listen, the contract and the length potentially scares me, but I mean, I could say that about any player that's not in their early 20s. I mean, these guys can get hurt and never be the same. But I mean, at face value, there is no one on this market that is more perfect for Fenway Park than Pete Alonso. And he does fit a major need for our team because we are so lefty heavy as far as a lineup. So, I mean, it's practically a match made in heaven at this point. I mean, I think at Fenway Park, he's going to hit 40 plus home runs. He might even hit 50 and start touching some of his early Met numbers. But I mean, there's no one I want more. And I haven't seen a match made in heaven more than like since JD Martinez, to be honest with you. And it's the closest parallel that you could really think of. Power right-handed hitter. It's a team that's ready to compete, although that team was more World Series ready than this one at this point. But, I mean, I would love Pete Alonso. I live in New York, so I hear about the Mets side and perspective. And I was talking to Terry about this before the show. I truly do believe that at this point, the Mets are going to have to actually overpay to keep Pete Alonso because, you know, you think about they get Francisco Lindor. He became the guy. And this is when Pete was already hitting 50 home runs and pacing himself to be the Mets' all-time home run hitter. And he is. Then they get Soto. He has become afterthought after afterthought when he's literally the homegrown. He is Mr. Met at this point. Outside of Seaver, this guy stayed a Met. There should be a statue of him outside of Citi Field. And that's just not the case. And the Mets haven't treated him that way, which is kind of shocking. But I think they're going to drastically have to overpay to keep him. And I would anticipate that in the next couple of days, I think he should sign with someone. I hope it is the Boston Red Sox. Sign me up.
So the market for Pete Alonso, as far as we know, based on reports in the last week, is he might only get a 3 to 4 year deal. I'm assuming he probably wants 5 or 6. That's probably what Boris is asking for. But let's just say it's 4 years. There is no reason on God's green earth to not give Pete Alonso a 4-year deal. If you can't execute that deal where his market is not super robust, I mean, we've been comparing it. We've been saying he is the JD Martinez of this year's free agency since the offseason began. And if you think back to the JD Martinez signing, it was only the Red Sox and the Diamondbacks that were in on him. And the Diamondbacks were only willing to give him a 1-year, $30 million deal. So the Red Sox just played the waiting game. And you know what? If Dave Dombrowski is my GM and he's up in that front office, I'm perfectly comfortable with the waiting game because I know he's a smart executive. He can navigate the market and he can handle it and he can ultimately close the deal. I'm not that confident in Craig Breslow. I think there's a million ways Craig Breslow can screw that deal up. Just go get your guy. Go get the obvious fit that you need and get it done and be serious about it and be an executive. I don't trust that he's not going to overthink it. He's going to talk himself out of it. I don't know what's going on in Breslow's mind, but I don't really trust him to handle a lot of things. And it's just such an obvious fit and there's no excuses. If you don't give Pete Alonso a 4-year deal, whether it's 25 to 30 million, I doubt it's more than that. What are you doing?
And at the end of the day, you need a first baseman. whether it's Pete Alonso or it's someone else for, you know, depth or someone else to start the year, you know, as your first baseman, Tristan Casas is not going to be ready by opening day. I don't care what they're telling you now that, you know, oh, well, he's working out down in Fort Myers and everything's going good. No, like that kind of injury, he's not going to be ready. Even if he said he was ready, I'd want Casas to spend at least a month, month and a half down in Worcester, you know, getting his you-know-what together before I even think about calling him up and making him your everyday first baseman again. So you're going to need one anyway. Why not go get Alonso? He's a perfect fit for your ballpark. He's already said, like, he understands that at some point he's going to have to be a DH. Like, Pete Alonso is already saying, like, hey, I'm okay moving to DH at some point. Like, if I got to move off first, you know, I get it. So he's the reverse of Rafael Devers. Like, he understands that, you know, he's a little bit of a slob over there at first base, and he's probably going to have to be a DH at some point. So good. You sign him to a four-year deal. You start him out at first, and then you let Tristan Casas rehab. And with any luck, Casas tears it up in both spring training and in his rehab. And by June 1st, you go, okay, we'll call up Casas, put him at first, make Alonso our DH. And, you know, if Yoshida's still there, whatever, send him. Who cares what you do with Yoshida at this point? But it's the perfect solution. You get your power bat, you get your middle of the order bat, and a four-year deal for Alonso doesn't scare me. I don't think that he's going to just turn into a pumpkin year two or year three and be completely useless. He's going to hit power. Like, the guy is just natural, raw power. So it's such a no-brainer, and I kind of agree with you, Terry. I don't think they're going to do it. And I don't know if it's because Breslow overthinks it or if he gets gun-shy. I don't know if it's because they're afraid of upsetting Casas and kind of, you know, screwing that whole thing up, because we know Casas has a very fragile ego and, you know, he'll probably make more cryptic Instagram posts about it and all that crap. So I don't know if that's what's making them nervous, but it feels like such a no-brainer to bring Alonso here. And I know people really want Kyle Schwarber. And look, Schwarber was really fun when he was here, but Alonso's the better fit. He's a better fit for your ballpark. Schwarber is a big-time pull power hitter. He, at Fenway Park, like, his numbers would go down. He's going to want to go somewhere that's got a short porch or a short right field. So Alonso's the better fit. It just, four-year deal doesn't scare me. The money doesn't really scare me. And it gives you so much more at first base than what you're getting right now. So it feels like an easy one to me. But again, I do not feel confident in them getting it done, because I think that they are still so obsessed with Tristan Casas, and I feel like they don't want to upset the balance there.
Since the pandemic ended, 2021, he's hit 37, 40, 46, 34, 38 home runs. So that's 37 or more in four of the last five seasons. And how many would he hit at Fenway Park? Poppy hit 54 pre-07, so take that for what it's worth. He might, and who's to say he wouldn't eclipse that on a really good year at Fenway Park? I don't have his spray chart up. I think he's relatively an all fields guy. I don't know. I don't think he's hardcore pull hitter. I've seen him go the other way enough. So, but I still think this park is tailor made for him. There is no reason not to get him. This is a test for Craig Breslow. All right. Do you have the ability to get your guy? Because if you don't, you have absolutely no business being a chief baseball officer, on a big market team. You know, if Breslow came up, if he was in the Cincinnati Reds front office, maybe they would love him just for his ability to overhaul a pitching program. Because, and he is good at that. That is the one thing he's good at. And we're starting to see it with some of these young guys. But that's all he's good at so far. And that's not good enough to be a chief baseball officer. So he's got to get his guy. They are meeting with him tomorrow, which is Tuesday, for the iTunes and Spotify crowd. I want to get a deal done on Tuesday. Just get it done.
Well, Terry, I got a question for you. So, well, two questions. We know that Breslow's been open and adamant that they need a power bat. Do you think he looks at Alonso as that person? Or is it Schwarber? Or is it someone else that we're not considering that's potential trade?
I don't think he's looking at Schwarber at all for the reasons Jason said. You have to DH him. You already have your DH. You might have three DHs if you want to lump Tristan Casas into that. Could you hide him in the outfield for a random game? Yeah, probably, especially left field. It's the smallest left field in all of Major League Baseball. That's not ideal. But more than that, he's got a pick attached to him. And our farm system's taking a bit of a hit, which yeah. we might get to shortly. So I don't think the Red Sox are going to be talking to Kyle Schwarber at all.
So you think Alonso is that name then?
Yeah, absolutely, 1,000%.
So if they go into that meeting tomorrow, what do you think about a 5-year, $140 million offer?
I would still do it.
No, but meaning like where do you think as far as traction, where would that get us if that was our start?
That would win it. That would blow it out of the water. Scott Boras would have to say yes immediately, and Pete Alonso would be a member of the Boston Red Sox.
All right, Craig, just get it done. 5-140 million. You heard it here first.
Yeah, absolutely. And Alonso said, like, or at least the rumors are that, like, the Red Sox are high on his list. So he made it a priority to meet with you at the beginning of the week here at the winter meetings. Like, he's not messing around. And I agree, like 5-140 million would probably get it done because he's being told from other teams, we don't want to go past 3 years for you. So 5-140 million, he would absolutely take that. And especially for Boston, for playing half his games at Fenway Park, like, yeah, I think that would get it done. It should be a no-brainer. Like, we should hear tomorrow that the meeting went well, that talks are progressing. Like, I want to see that. Tomorrow. I don't necessarily need the deal to be done tomorrow, but I want to hear that they're approaching the goal line on a deal, because if they have that meeting and it just comes out as, oh, you know, it went well, but the Red Sox are still pursuing other options, then I'm gonna have a real meltdown, because that just means that, you know, we don't want to meet that price tag. So we'll see. We'll see how the Pete Alonso thing goes. Obviously, like I said, meeting with the Red Sox on Tuesday, so that could be the first big domino to fall. We will see. Another potential domino that could be falling out west is Ketel Marte with the Arizona Diamondbacks. So the Diamondbacks have made it clear that they are willing and somewhat eager to deal Ketel Marte this offseason. So he's got some term left on his contract. Second baseman, switch hitter. He's got power. Been a good player for a long time. A little bit of a head case sometimes. There's been some off-the-field stuff that wasn't great this past season. There's obviously that awful incident with the fan talking about his deceased mother. Obviously not his fault. But then his house was burglarized, and he took a couple of days off to kind of deal with that. And the rumors and the reports at the time were that his teammates were not thrilled with kind of the way he handled that and how much time he took off. So There's some off-the-field stuff attached with him, but he's a fantastic player, and you do have an open position at second base. So how would you guys feel about trading for Ketel Marte?
I would be 100% open to it, pending what the return is. And I think, for me, like, all the reports indicate that Arizona's looking for major league-ready pitching, right? So, like, everyone that's talking about Connelly Early – and Peyton Tolle, yes, they came up, but I don't necessarily know if I put them in MLB-ready pitching, because there's nothing to suggest that they're 100% these surefire hits to where you get rid of a Ketel Marte. It doesn't make any sense. The other word in there was controllable, and yes, they are controllable based on their age and their current contracts, but again, I don't necessarily know if I put them at MLB-level pitching status yet, because they could completely flame out and have a sophomore slump. To me, if I'm putting together a package, it's headlined with Brian Bayo. He is young, he is controllable, and say what you want, he's never going to be the ace that we hoped he's going to be, but he's a number two for most teams. For us, he's not. We already saw that in the playoffs. So to me, you headline it with him. I'd throw in a Tristan Casas, and if you have to get creative, start throwing in names like Kyle Harrison, even Hunter Dobbins, if I got to do that, great. I mean, if you tell me that there's absolutely no chance of getting a number two pitcher and that it really is Sonny Gray, I pray to God it's not. But if it really is him, then maybe I'm even talking about putting in a Peyton Tolley, if that's what it takes to get the deal across the finish line. Because to me, you sign Pete Alonso for 5-year, $140 million, Craig, and you go out there and get a Kettle Marte, it's a great offseason. Now, if you tell me that there's going to have to be a number two pitcher somewhere in there, I don't see how we sign Pete Alonso and trade for Kettle Marte, because I just think there's going to have to be too much invested in doing that. And if we're going to trade for a number two pitcher, we will really deplete everything to be able to get both those deals done. At that point, I would sign Pete Alonso. I would pivot, try and get a deal done with Bo Bichette, and then use all of my assets and go out there and get that number two pitcher.
I think Brian Baio, I would put it at more than a 50% chance he gets traded at this point. You know, if you make a deal with the Diamondbacks, they need pitching. They just lost Merrill Kelly.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're going to lose Zach Gallen too.
They are losing Zach Gallen. Yeah, correct. So they've lost two key guys from their rotation, you know, between the deadline and free agency now. And so, you know, that's a team that probably wants an established pitcher. I think Brian Baio would be attractive. Coming off the best year of his career, I don't know. I mean, perhaps the ceiling is higher for Baio going forward, but his stock's never been higher. So that could be a guy that gets moved. I would put Patrick Sandoval in that deal. I would try real hard to include him in that deal to free up $12.5 million. That would almost cover Marte's first year. I'm pretty sure, I'm pulling it up right now, but I think I'm pretty sure Marte tops out at, like, isn't it like $18 million a year, something like that? Here it is. Oh, well, not quite. So he is due $15 million this year. It dips down to $12 million in 2027, then spikes back up to $20, $22, and $22 through the 2030 season. Oh, and he has a player option for 2023. That's worth $11 million. So the off-field stuff does kind of give me a little bit of pause. I'm not like a definite no yet, but he does seem to be a bit high maintenance. He seems to ask for days off just straight up when he's not necessarily injured. You know, I haven't done a full deep dive, but he does have a little bit of baggage, and quite frankly, it sounds like it's worse than Devers. I mean, Devers didn't want to play first base. You know, he didn't want to come off his position. And it wasn't because he didn't want to play baseball. It's because he loves baseball. And you know, he felt committed to being a third baseman. And, you know, and Devers powered through all kinds of injuries. He, you know, he had some hamstring issues that were kind of dogging him, never officially went on the injured list in 2023 and 2024, but he could grind it out. So just the stuff I've seen on Marte, not quite, but you know, when you're coming to Fenway Park and you're in the same clubhouse as Trevor Story and, you know, Jaron Duran, even, who infamously lost his bid for 162 for, you know, getting into it with a fan. You know, Rafael, I don't think reached 162 that year, but I think they rested him because he just needed it, quite frankly. That was after about 140 games. So this is a clubhouse full of players that want to be on the field. And you would hope that would resonate with a guy like Marte. And, you know, Alex Cora is the type of manager that could probably kind of keep him on the straight and narrow. If Cora can't, then probably no one can. So I just hope that if we do it, I'm not regretting it because, you know, I'm a character guy. And I was just thinking about that today when I was pondering, you know, whether or not we should go for him. I'm like, we really haven't had a clubhouse cancer in a while. Like a guy that was cancerous year after year. We haven't really had that. So there's not one guy I don't like from a character standpoint. Well, other than maybe Casas, but you know, he hasn't been on the field anyway. So we'll see, but I think Bayo has to be in the deal. You might have to include a Cutter Crawford type guy, but yeah, I would try if they're confident that Sandoval is healthy and he can pass the physical, then I would try to just get him in the deal to kind of unload that contract. But yeah, I would do it. And Marte is the best all-around second baseman in Major League Baseball, and it's not even close.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the off-field stuff is the only thing that gives me a little bit of pause, because he just signed that extension with Arizona, and now they're already desperate to kind of shop him. Now, that could be just because things really went south for Arizona this season. I mean, they went in as not a World Series favorite, but at least people thought they'd be a contender, and then they just, between injuries and underperformance, they just, you know, tanked and completely blew it up at the deadline, and you know, they're kind of bare bones now. I mean, it's Marte and just a bunch of Jags over there. So maybe that's why they're doing it, because they just figure, okay, we got to hit a full reset here and get as many assets back as we can for Marte, because we're probably not going to compete for the next 3 to 4 years while we rebuild. But it does give me a little bit of pause that he signs this extension with them, and then, you know, the following winter, you know, they're shopping him around and making it known that they're shopping him around. I still wouldn't mind if the Red Sox did it, though. I think you guys are on the right track with, you know, you put Brian Bayo as like the headliner because he's young, he's under contract. I also don't think Bayo is a Breslow type of pitcher. I think Breslow likes guys who punch guys out and can throw a good sweeper and all that. Bayo pitches to contact. He's a ground ball guy. So I think Breslow is kind of looking for an opportunity to get rid of him. I don't think Bayo's profile is what Breslow is looking for. So yeah, he's controllable. He's young. That'd be, you know, a good get for Arizona. If you threw in someone like a Hunter Dobbins, who's also young and has years of control left, I think that's a good start. And then throw in a prospect who's like you take a flyer on a guy like a Franklin Arias, right? You have so many effing shortstops in your system. You know, one of them might pan out. One of them might not. You know, maybe a Nazan Sanatello or something. Like, I think you do a package like that, you're in pretty good shape. Now, there are going to be other teams calling about Ketel Marte, so you might get outbid by someone who, you know, offers a better prospect package or offers a better pitching, you know, package. But I still want them to try. I mean, I don't think that's crazy to give up a package like that for a guy like Ketel Marte, who, as Terry said, has been the best second baseman in baseball for several years now. And the fact that he's a switch hitter, you know, has some pop from both sides of the plate. Like, that's a guy you can put right in that number three spot in your lineup, and he can do damage. And you pair him with someone like Alonso, you know, in the cleanup spot, you know, that's really good. So, now obviously, you know, as Chris pointed out, like, you can't have everybody, because the Red Sox still need to go get a true number two, in my opinion. Sonny Gray cannot just be it. So if you trade for Ketel Marte, that's more assets going out the door for you. That makes it harder to then go trade for that number two starter without just completely blowing up and depleting your farm system. So they do have to tread a little bit carefully, but I would still make the offer, because that guy can be a game changer. And yeah, the attitude problems, like, I would have thought a guy like Torrey Lovello could have sorted him out, but maybe just there's such a, you know, a talent drain and such a leadership void over there in Arizona that it didn't matter. You know, like, when you trade away that many guys and you basically wave the white flag in July, I mean, that's going to create a not so good environment for a guy like Marte, who is a superstar. So maybe you bring him here, you know, you bring near Alex Cora, Trevor Story, like, he kind of, you know, comes to Boston. He's not just out in the desert where nobody pays attention to him. He's in a big city, gets to, you know, inject himself into the Yankees rivalry. Like, maybe that wakes him up. And he goes, okay, you know what? I don't want the days off. I want to play because this is a great place to play and we have a chance to win. So change of scenery could be really good for a guy like Ketel Marte. So, yeah, I want the Red Sox to make the offer. Whether or not they get him, we'll see. I don't feel great about it. I'd say around 30 to 40% chance at this point, but even that feels a little bit high. So we'll see. But I'm glad they're at least talking with Arizona about it. And I think that they can put together a package that would be appealing to them.
I think I just solved the package issue as far as getting the pitcher and getting Ketel Marte. So if you offered Bayo, which we agree, if we do Bayo, I'll even throw in Kyle Harrison and a Franklin Arias, right? Because again, like you said, we've got plenty of those guys, dime a dozen. This just landed from, let's see, Alex Speer. The Red Sox haven't ruled out further upgrades to the top of the rotation with the Tigers. Unable or unwilling to squash trade rumors with Tarik Skubal, the Red Sox should be able to assemble a package to be a part of that conversation. Now, I'm not saying it would happen, but if we're talking about the hypotheticals being able to get both done, let's assume Ketel gets done with the other deal. You could easily, if this thing is really real and no one's getting in the mix because of the money that's going to have to come with this contract with Tarik Skubal, give him Connerly early, give him Tristan Casas. Hell, I'll even throw in, I don't know, give me a name. Who else would you throw in?
Would you throw in Christian Campbell?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Done.
I read that report too. I mean, it's just very speculative. I wouldn't really put a ton into it right now.
No, I don't think it's going to happen. I'm just giving how we could do it if we wanted to. Like, that is technically an option that I didn't necessarily consider without completely getting rid of everything in the cupboard, which I would have thought we'd have to do.
Yeah. Getting back to Marte real quick, they've exchanged names. Like, we did get a report on that earlier. I did find just an obscure thing. I couldn't really corroborate it with a major source, but the report that the names had been exchanged came after that. Would you guys put Marcelo Meyer into the Marte package? So Meyer, Bayo, and let's say Sandoval for Ketel Marte.
The only way I'm putting Meyer in that package is if somehow the Sox are like, we're good at pitching. They get Pete Alonso and somehow Bo Bichette's in the mix. Because to me, to get rid of Marcelo Meyer, you're going to create a hole at third base that, yeah, we plug second base, but we have nothing to fill that. So if they want to go on a complete shopping and spending spree and spend, God, all this money, yeah, I'm good with it in that particular case. But if not, no, don't fill a hole by creating another hole.
Yeah, I agree. I would do it, but I'd want like a Bo Bichette coming here or something like that, because you can't get rid of all your infielders. I mean, at some point, Trevor Story's not going to be here, you know, with the Red Sox anymore, right? His contract is going to come up at some point. So, yeah, you get Marte, but, you know, let's say you get Marte and Alonso. Okay, that takes care of the right side of the infield. I mean, again, Story's only got a year or two left. Third base is empty. You know, you're going to need to do something there. So, you've got some guys down the minors. You know, Mikey Romero ascended this past season. You know, he made it up to AAA, but, you know, he just got there. So I don't think that you can really pencil him in as like, okay, yeah, he can just take Marcelo Meyer's spot. I mean, Meyer was a first-round pick. Like, this guy's been in your system a while. Like, we've been waiting on him for a while. So, I don't know how good Meyer can be because he keeps getting hurt. So it's kind of hard to tell what kind of a major leaguer he's going to be full time. But if you do that, fine. But you've got to plug the hole some other way.
I would do it personally because for a little bit of what you just said, Jason, the guy hasn't been healthy literally ever. He's never given you a full season in the minors and couldn't make it through the one season. He didn't start the season anyway with the Red Sox, but he was out by July or August. And I don't trust the manager to let him start every day. You know, he could very well be a platoon guy. So I think this would be like an easy out you know, from Marcelo Meyer. And if I'm getting the best second baseman in all of baseball, I'll do it, and I'll just go find a cheap glove somewhere until the Arias or the Mikey Romero type guys are ready.
Terry, I forgot we have Nick Sogard. He could play third. It's my favorite player.
I thought, wasn't he a shit show?
I mean, he's a shit show. I mean, we just talked about a guy not being able to possibly play because of injury. It can't be worse than that.
Yeah, well, I mean, if Sogard's adequate defensively, I mean, then I would definitely do it. But I thought he might not have had a good couple of games there. And I know they played him at first quite a bit after that, before Romy kind of won the spot.
I'm going to have to look it up now, because it was really a tongue-in-cheek comment just because I love Nick Sogard at second. But
I like Sogard. You know, I mean, he could be a Brock Holt type guy, but... but I think you can find a cheap enough defensive guy. Go get like a, not Jose Iglesias, but a Jose Iglesias type guy on a 1-year deal, and you know, and do it that way.
Well, if it's any consolation, and after talking about Ketel Marte, Alex Speer like 10 minutes ago said that he's starting to downplay the Red Sox interest in Marte, and that other teams have been more aggressive with their trade packages. So, surprise, surprise, the Red Sox are getting outbid again. So, oh well.
Craig Breslow, man, that guy will talk himself out of anything.
Yep. Well, there is another player that Breslow is trying to talk himself into. This is a really interesting one. So, this report came out today that the Red Sox have shown interest in reacquiring catcher Kyle Teal from the Chicago White Sox. So obviously White Sox are, you know, making it known he's available. They're at least taking calls on him. Red Sox are interested. So would you guys want them to trade away? You know, it'd probably be prospects because White Sox are still rebuilding. So would you be interested in the Red Sox trading away prospects to get Kyle Teal back?
I would need to know what the prospects are. But I mean, just hearing it and at face value, I mean, what a turn of events it would be to get the guy that basically headlined the package to get Garrett Crochet, in which he was so bummed that he wasn't going to be able to catch Garrett Crochet. So that would be kind of ironic. I mean, is it – see, the way I read it is that the Sox were interested in getting Kyle Teal. Is it reported that the White Sox would be willing to trade him? Like, is that a known thing yet?
All we saw is that the Red Sox are interested in acquiring him. So, okay. To me, that means they've at least talked about it.
Yeah. The only thing I would say is that's kind of a little alarming. Like, why would the White Sox all of a sudden want to get rid of him? Unless they're looking at it like, hey, we're really far away, and we really don't have anything else in the cupboard that could fetch us more. And they're looking at it like, get rid of one big piece to try and get three potential lottery tickets and hitting two out of the three. But as Sox fans, I mean, we've seen that. You hold on to these lottery tickets, most of them don't pan out. So, yeah, I would have interest. Obviously, I would need to know what the asking is at this point. But I certainly wouldn't give away a ton, because I don't see enough downside with Carlton Arias that I would say, oh, we really need a catcher. Not compared to all the other holes that we have to fill in this team right now. It's not the most pressing need. I think just from the nostalgia of being able to have one of the major four – and Kyle Teal back would be nice.
Apparently they, and breaking news, not nothing major, but, the Rays just signed Steven Matz. So he definitely will not be coming back to the Red Sox. I would have been open to it, but apparently, the Rays wanted him more than we did. But getting back to Teal here real quick, apparently there's another catcher in their system, Edward Caro. I don't know if that's how he pronounces it, but they're pretty deep at catcher, and maybe they can flip Teal and get another haul. You know, I said, you know, we just talked about trading Marcelo Meyer, and I think we were all over the spectrum, I guess. But I think as a crew, we could be talked into it for the right package, even if it's not Marte. But, you know, before the Crochet trade, you had the big three. Okay, you had Teal, you had Anthony, and you had Campbell. Anthony's worked out phenomenally. Christian Campbell, not so much. Kyle Teal is gone. You just traded your highest ceiling right-handed hitting prospect to the Pirates. You know, and Chicago seemed to know the Red Sox system better than Craig Breslow did, because they hit on all three of those guys. They hit on Teal. They hit on Montgomery. And that slappy hitting infielder, whose name I can't even remember, but had a good year for Chicago. So the big three just didn't, you know, we either don't have them anymore, and Anthony's the only one that's worked out. Like, how many times do we want to be fleeced by the White Sox at this point? I think you just have to let it ride with the catching tandem you have with Narvaez. He's a solid defender. He can gun down base runners. And I don't think he's the guy that we saw in the hot streak there for 6 weeks, but I don't think he's necessarily as bad as he was in August and September. So I think you just have to let it ride at catcher and, you know, focus on other parts of your infield.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, the report was amusing. Like, wow, it'd be kind of funny if the Red Sox somehow got Kyle Teal back after trading him for Garrett Crochet, like, who is, in, you know, undoubtedly your new ace for the foreseeable future. But I'm good. Like, Narvaez is fine. You know, what he gave you last year was really good. Is he going to repeat that? Probably not. There might be a little bit of a regression to the mean, but he's still good. At least defensively, you know, he's going to give you, you know, a really good defensive effort. You know, he's got to cut down on the catcher's interference, but other than that, he's very good defensively. And I don't think Connor Wong's going to be as bad as he was last year. That's the other thing, is that you got by with Connor Wong kind of being a zero for most of the season. I mean, how long did it take him to get his first RBI last year? Like, it felt like it was, you know, 3 or 4 months before he did that. I don't think he's going to be that bad again. So if he takes a little bit of a step forward and kind of fixes whatever was wrong with him last year, and Narvaez comes back and gives you at least close to what he gave you last season, then you're fine. Like, that's all you need, a catcher. You just need someone who's competent defensively and isn't a complete zero at the plate. I don't need, you know, Will Smith. I don't need Adley Rutschman. I don't need, you know, like, a superstar catcher. I just need, you know, a good enough tandem that the pitching staff likes working with, and you're good. So I'm not interested in giving up more prospects just to get a former prospect back. And yeah, that concerns me. It's like, why is Chicago giving up on him? I get it. They're probably still, you know, 3, 4, 5 years away from competing. You know, they've got a massive rebuild going on. But you're part of you're doing a massive rebuild, and you don't want a 23-year-old catcher who's like a top prospect. That's a little concerning to me. And I get it. You're right. They have that other kid, Edgar Caro, who they might be shopping him as well. I don't know, but yeah, that's just a little bit concerning. It's like, why are the White Sox willing to part with him, you know, after just getting him, you know, giving up their former ace, who, yeah, we all knew they were going to trade him, but still, that's just a little bit concerning. So I agree with Terry, like, let it ride with what you got. Narvaez and Wong, that's a fine catching tandem. You know, they picked up another catcher in that deal with Pittsburgh. So, you know, I think they're starting to restock that position anyway. So you're fine. I don't need them, you know, giving away more prospects to get one back. It's just, I think you're fine with what you got.
Breslow's just been super erratic with everything this winter. I mean, you go to the Sonny Gray deal. I hope it works out, but I just don't remember a starting pitcher since the pandemic, let's say, in the American League East, that could start 30 games with a 91 mile an hour fastball in this division. Three of the parks are extremely home run friendly: Fenway, Yankee Stadium, and Camden Yards. And then the Trop and the Rogers Center, I mean, I don't know if they're home run friendly, but they're not pitcher friendly, I wouldn't say. I mean, they're kind of neutral. If you're a power hitter, you're probably going to have a good season in those parks too. So, and then Sonny Gray is a raging head case. So I don't like that deal. It has a lot of red flags. Maybe it'll work out. I don't know, but there's a lot of red flags. Okay. It's the move that can get you fired. And then you traded the password, who, and I agree, he probably didn't have much of a future, but you probably could have put him in a better package than Johan Oviedo, who has not pitched very well in one of the weakest divisions in Major League Baseball. I would say that only the AL Central is probably weaker than the NL Central. And so you traded your highest upside right-handed hitting prospect for a lottery ticket who only has 2 years of control left. So you're not even getting a controllable guy. That is a very erratic move by Breslow. And so I don't, are we getting more news here? Nope, more on Steven Matz. But so I just, what I wanted to see from Breslow here was someone who's a little bit more seasoned than the 2 years before. And that's not what we're getting. We're getting a lot of head scratching stuff. And I don't trust anything. I mean, the report just a handful of minutes ago, now we're possibly backing out on Ketel Marte. What do we trust this guy to handle? I don't know. And the farm system, after trading the password, I don't know how quickly they update their standings. I bet we're not even a top 15 farm anymore. I'd be surprised if we're still ranked in the top half of MLB. And then we've talked all episode long about the infield. We're probably not going to adequately address the defense problems. I think we're probably on track to still be one of the worst defensive teams in MLB next year. We made the playoffs being the worst one this past year. So, and then you've got a million outfielders, like, you know, you've got Anthony, Rafaela, Duran, Abreu. Where the hell is Christian Campbell going to play? How do you solve that problem? This team is a mess right now, and I don't trust Breslow to handle anything, quite frankly.
Yeah, I mean, erratic's kind of putting it politely in some ways. You know, the Sonny Gray trade, again, I pretty much stayed the same on my opinion with it. If we end up with a true number two, it's a great move, especially if in – they have the foresight to know they're going to have to move Bayo, then I'm fine with it. But if you're going into it thinking he's your number two, I mean, you're just fooling yourself. I mean, you know, yeah, it's great now in the offseason. We're all sitting there going like, well, he's got another five value points because he hates the Yankees, but he's going to really hate the Yankees when they're taking him deep in Yankee Stadium and in Fenway Park, because his numbers in those two ballparks, which are the only two that really matter if we're going to get anywhere that we want to go, are atrocious. So, I mean, that goes without saying. The thing with Breslow on the Oviedo trade, I commend the fact that he got rid of the password. What I don't like is the deal in which he got rid of him, because we all said that you were going to have to get uncomfortable to make moves and do ballsy trades. And I mean, this is a pretty ballsy trade, because I really truly feel like the password could have been put into a deal that would have yielded something a lot better than the Oviedo. The only thing I can think of is, because the guy has trouble throwing strikes, I will give Breslow and the pitching coaches credit, because they have brought in some guys and be able to fix some things in their arsenal. And maybe they're thinking the same thing with Sonny Gray. Although I agree with Terry, you can't fix the fact that he throws 91 unless you're going to like put a rubber band on his arm and have it slingshot it in. But other than that, you're not fixing that. So you have to get creative to fix that. But with Oviedo, he does have some upside if he can control his pitches. I'm thinking that's what they were thinking. But again, I feel like you didn't have to get rid of the password to get him. I mean, the password could have easily been the name that we were throwing in a Ketel Marte trade. He could be in a Fernando Tatis trade, which this just dropped. Apparently, Kevin Ace from San Diego Union Tribune is basically saying that the Padres' AJ Preller is looking to shoot big with deals that are going to rival massive trades that acquired four major leaguers in exchange for Juan Soto and Trent Grissom in the winter meetings 2 years ago, and that basically if he gets his wish, it'll pale in comparison to the last two trades. So clearly the Padres are looking to make some big moves. Well, if we had the password, we could be making a Fernando Tatis deal, although it scares the crap out of me that I'm seeing Fernando Tatis in Yankees jerseys batting in another country. So who knows? Maybe the Yankees come out of the woodwork for that. But back to the point is they have been erratic, to say the least. And I commend him kind of because he did get uncomfortable in doing something that was kind of wild. It's just not the move I wanted to see. But I'm not going to complain about it too much because, again, if he ends up making other moves, then I'll look at it as great foresight. But if he doesn't, oh my God, if these things don't work out, what a mess.
The real test for Breslow is going to come not for free agent signings. Like if he signs Pete Alonso tomorrow, yeah, it's a great move. We'll give him a lot of credit, but we've also sat here tonight and said, well, yeah, it's a no-brainer. Like, duh. The guy wants to play here. It's not, you know, probably not that bad of a contract. It makes sense. The real test for Breslow in terms of his ability to navigate, you know, the offseason is what does he get back for either Duran or Willy Abreu? Because it seems like a foregone conclusion. One of those guys is getting traded. So you mentioned, you know, he traded the password, which I think we all agree he probably had to, right? There was no path to regular major league at-bats for Yostinson Garcia. There just wasn't room. There wasn't a path. Okay, so you have to trade him. You couldn't do better than Johan Oviedo, who is coming off of Tommy John and can't throw strikes. Like, if he traded the password for, like, Sandy Alcantara, who, yeah, has been up and down the last couple of years, but we kind of sit there and go, okay, former Cy Young winner, like, if he's healthy and ready to go, that's, you know, you feel pretty good about that. So we got to see what he's going to get back. If he trades Jaron Duran or he trades Willy Abreu, what's he get back for those guys? Because if he gets back a legit number two, or if it's like, God forbid, if it's Skubal or something like that, then we kind of go, oof, okay. Like, you kind of go, all right, you know what you're doing. But if it's another pitcher that, like, you don't know right away and you've got to look up his baseball reference and all that because you're not sure who he is, and you trade away a guy like Jaron Duran for that, that's going to be an indictment on Breslow. So that's going to be the big one. Like, the free agent signings, we'll see. But when he trades one of those two outfielders, which I think he's going to, the return on that is going to be where he really gets judged for this offseason because he's got to get something good for those guys or, you know, whichever one he decides to trade away. Because if he doesn't, oof, that's going to be real tough.
I don't think he knows how to trade those two guys. That's the problem, you know. But here's my read on the Breslow situation. I think last year, coming into the month of July, I think he was on thinner ice than a lot of people realize. And if you go back two Julys ago, we were talking about making moves, you know, and, you know, making a big splash that month. And people like Eddie Romero were speaking to the media. He's only an assistant general manager, and Sam Kennedy. And they said, we might make a big move, but only if the team plays well leading up to the deadline to justify it. And then no big moves happened. And then this past July, and right at the start of the month, they said, yeah, we're open to making a big move. We're going for it this year. And my read on it was they were giving Breslow rope here. Like, yeah, we're going to give you the flexibility. And if we still miss the postseason, it's your ass. And we made it to, you know, for Breslow, you know, he made it. So you weren't gonna fire him. And I think the erratic pattern of moves so far, it's like he knows his ass is on the line. I don't know how else to explain it, because, you know, Sonny Gray, as I pointed out, high risk move. The Oviedo deal did not make much sense at all. I mean, the password could have been in a Marte deal. He could have been in a Tatis deal. If Breslow was a little bit shrewder, maybe he would have been, maybe not the first piece, not the centerpiece of getting your number two, but he would have been in the deal to go get that guy. But I'm at a loss for words. That's why my words aren't coming out good right now. And as far as the Tatis deal with that tweet where they're saying he could be available and the Padres are looking to make big moves, I think if the Red Sox got Tatis, I think it's a similar deal that you're offering the Padres, the Diamondbacks for Marte, but plus Duran or Abreu, whichever one they prefer. And it's probably Duran. And I also think, and I said this in the war room earlier, if you trade for Tatis and it's a big package, I think that's your last best chance to get rid of Yoshida, because you can look at the Padres and say, we're taking on a ton of money. Okay. So you're going to take Yoshida to offset some of that, which is about $36 million over the next 2 years.
Well, Terry, it's pretty well known that you want Tatis, probably more than most players in the MLB currently. Would you agree with that?
He would be my top offensive trade target.
Okay. Because I'm trying to think of this as like with them like offloading, and I can't see them just giving away people and not being like, there's got to be a catch, right? So I'm trying to think of like what that would be. You really want Tatis. Now, let's see if you really want him. If it meant to get Tatis, let's say we're able to get Yoshida off, right? Couple of prospects similar to the Ketel Marte deal. However, it means taking back Bogarts. Would you do it?
No, absolutely not. Nope.
What if they're willing to eat part of it, though?
No, I want no part of Xander Bogarts. The guy can't stay on the field. And I don't think it's a lack of willingness to. I just think he legitimately breaks down. And that contract takes him through age 41. You know, we're counting down the years till we're free of Yoshida. And I'm not a Trevor Story guy, but I got no choice but to be a Trevor Story guy right now. You know, but I can't wait for that deal to end. I don't want Xander Bogarts back at all. But I think you're to get Tatis, you're looking at Duran, Bayo. I'd love it if we could put Crawford in that deal. Sandoval. But if it ends up being a Crawford type guy, I'll live with it.
And then
they're taking Yoshida. And you know, that's how I would do it. Another guy, I don't know if they're willing to part with him, but what about Jackson Merrill? Let's have a conversation there. I don't know. He's another guy I love. And let me point out this other thing. We're crowding our outfield now if we get Tatis, you know, and I guess Duran or Abreu are gone. But I think what that would mean is Rafaela might have to come to the infield, and maybe that's how you solve part of your infield problem defensively. I mean, Tatis has turned into a pretty good outfielder. Like, he's an above average defensive outfielder. Roman Anthony is going to be an above average defensive outfielder. I don't know if he'll ever win a gold glove, but he's very good in the outfield. And then I'm assuming we're going to have Abreu still. So that's still a very good defensive outfield by bringing Rafaela into the infield. And
what if they wanted two of them, Terry, to get Tatis? What if they wanted both Duran and Abreu, or Duran and Rafaela? Which one would you rather part with, Abreu or Rafaela? Because we know Duran's gone.
Um, So what are we giving up for pitching? I'd probably...
Let's just say it's not like a Connelly earlier, Peyton Tolley, but all the other names are on the table. So Bayo, Cutter Crawford.
That would be steep, you know. I'm but if it, I'll tell you what, if it gets rid of Yoshida for sure, and that's just a hypothetical on my part. That's just me trying to put him in there. I don't know if that's remotely realistic, but if it definitely gets rid of Yoshida, I'll give him Duran, Abreu.
I was going to say, you're going to rather keep Rafaela. Jason would probably rather keep Abreu.
That's true.
Yeah, I knew it.
I don't care to pick two of the three. I don't care. Rafaela, you know, he can play the infield. So that's why I wasn't originally putting him in there.
That's why I would probably, if I had to give away two, I would say Abreu and Duran for that reason, because of the flexibility with Rafaela, especially knowing that, like, even if we do plug some of these holes, like in a couple of years, there's going to be more. Because Story comes off the books, and then depending what happens with Mayer regarding either trade or injury, those are going to be holes. So,
and I'll say this, and this will be my final thing. If Breslow pulled that off, if Fernando Tatis is in the Red Sox lineup hitting third or fourth on opening day, that's a narrative-changing trade. But I don't think he has the balls to do it.
Terry, if he gets it, I'll tell you what. If he signs, we're going to make a wager here on the Bastards, okay? If he gets us a number two, Fernando Tatis, and signs Pete Alonso, you have to get Bresbian tattooed on you.
I'm not getting any tattoos. I don't do needles. The All last right. needle Head that up. Went into me was a tetanus shot, and I... Let's just say the video would have went viral. I don't like needles.
What about a henna tattoo? But you have to have it like Oh, come on.
No, I'm not putting ink on me. I don't have any tattoos. You guys have tattoos? I'm plain.
You got three.
Not a single one.
Yeah. I'm plain. My girlfriend's got like eight of them. But yeah, it's a narrative changing thing, but I don't trust Breslow to do it. And I think there's a good chance he's Audi 5000 if this does go sideways. And we haven't even talked about the bullpen. Like, I'm always the eternal optimist about the bullpen. It looks vulnerable to me. I'm not saying it's definitely going to be bad, but it looks vulnerable. But
yeah. Well, luckily we've got a lot of the winter still to go. So hopefully some deals start getting made, some signings start getting done. I think tomorrow that'll be a big one. We'll see how that meeting with Pete Alonso goes. But yeah, so still some time left, but I think it's time for Craig to get moving, get some deals done. So when those do happen, we'll be right here. So keep an eye on your Twitter feeds, all that. Anytime there's any sort of Red Sox breaking news, we'll hop on, we'll talk about it. So we'll be talking to you guys pretty soon. Hopefully we'll have a signing or a trade to talk about sometime this week. But anyway, long winter to go. So we'll see how it goes. Everyone have a good rest of your week, and we'll talk to you guys later. Take care.
Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.